You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Amen. Good morning, Makers Church. Happy New Year. Have a seat. If we've never met, my name's Derek. I'm so glad that you're here. How many of you guys had an incredible Christmas? Give me a shout. Awesome. This is honest. This is family. How many of you was it dreadful? Give me a shout. A couple of you. Awesome. Taylor, thanks for your honesty. The holidays can be nuts, right? The holidays can be crazy, and family overstays their welcome, and travel plans don't work out, and it can be a really nutty time. But it's such a cool thing to be here together on New Year's Eve. It's always so interesting the way the calendar year will fall, and I think it's really special today, 2017, that we could be together on this eve of a new year. Like it's already been said this morning many times, it's a really interesting moment in the calendar, right? Where we have the past behind us, and for so many of us, it was an incredible year, and we have so much to be grateful for, and for some of you, it was so challenging. You're so glad the year's coming to an end. We have the future ahead of us, and there are so many hopes and dreams and anticipation, and the future will unfold before us, or we'll create it, whatever happens in 2018. But today, I think, is a moment that invites us into something that I think is perhaps the most challenging thing to do as a human being. It's to practice the discipline of presence. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. I think so many of us, we are wired for one or the other. We are wired to reminisce about the past, to have the good old days, to have great memories. Any of you guys nostalgic in the room, give me a shout. You love Christmas, right? Because as you open up the boxes of Christmas ornaments, if you're like my wife, you have to sit and talk about every single ornament and who gave it to you or where you were when you got it or why this moment in your history as a family was significant. We've been paying attention this year to our friends and your quirky traditions, like the weird stuff families do. And it's just so interesting to see that so many of us can be wired to really love and appreciate the past. And my wife is that way. She loves time hop. She loves to Facebook does it now too, memories or whatever they call it. She loves to scrapbook. She loves to document and have things to look back on. But others of you, if you're like me, you love the future. You love to plan and dream and anticipate and think big about what's coming and how you're going to get there. But most of us, we have this huge difficulty, this challenge with being present in the moment. And that's what I want to challenge us with this morning, because this is a word, this has been a really difficult thing for me to get my head and my heart around over the last several years. And the kids in my family have been really the main driver for this, right? There's nothing like a new baby to awake you to this reality that time goes really quick and that baby snuggles only last a short time and that you can literally watch a child grow in front of your own eyes. And so for us, it's been a really interesting season in the last couple of months. We had a brand new baby, our third child, and I've taken quite a bit of time off of work from the fire department, and so I've been home, which is so interesting. We live a pretty fast-paced life, and I feel like I'm a decent dad. I'm a pretty good dad. I've got it down. My wife also works in the ER, and when we're like baton passing throughout our lives, we're really good. Like, I've got a system down, and when it's just me and the kids, I've got it all figured out. The kids only have minor injuries. They get bathed, they get fed, they go to bed. It's all good. And my wife, she's more stellar than I am. She gets the laundry done and all the other stuff that happens. But when we're all together, it is a beautiful chaos. And our kids are so wise on how to poke through all the little cracks. And they know how to divide us. And they know exactly how we parent differently. And it is just a fun old time together. And the kids have been off from school around Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so it's been a really interesting time of year. For me, it's been a really fun, beautiful chaos. I wouldn't change it for anything. But I've been really challenged in these last several weeks to really practice the discipline of presence, and it is the most challenging thing that I've ever endeavored to do. And this is not a new endeavor for me. I've tried this the last several years around this time to just be here and now. And I really want to encourage you with that and challenge you with that this morning. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about the past for a little bit, because I don't necessarily think that the past is bad in and of itself, right? The past is good. It's good to remember what God has done. It's good to remember the great things. The past is important for us to reflect upon. I think it's one of the major drivers for gratitude in our lives. If we can look back and we can remember not just the good things, but the challenges that we made it through and the people that rallied around us and the things that shaped us and forged us. It's a beautiful thing. But if we're not careful, if we only reminisce about the past, we will actually miss the moment to create new memories that we will reflect on later on. If we just reminisce in the past, if we just sit in what has happened, we will miss our moment to create new memories, to do new things, to create new moments to look back on and remember and be grateful for. And I think it's easy for life to slip by. But it is important for us to pause and to look back. And as I look back over the year, I can't help but be grateful for all that God has done in the life of our church. Hasn't it been an incredible year? It's been a nutty year. It's been crazy. But as I look back, I think about, sorry, my nose really itches this morning. I look back and just all of the lives who were changed by Jesus, people who said yes to him for the first time, people who stepped into serving for the first time, people who dedicated their children and were baptized, people who found a home here, people who said, you know what, I want to make the mission of Jesus the mission of my life, and they started serving and giving their lives away. So many people, so many of you have done that this year, and it's been incredible. You've made it through several moves this year. You moved from downtown to North Park to Point Loma. Clap yourselves up for that. That's incredible. You guys are like the most graceful people I've ever met. And whether you've been with us for a long time or if this is your first time, this is a special family to be a part of. And it doesn't take long to enter in. If you are new with us, welcome to your family. Welcome home. This is the crazy, beautiful chaos that we are together. But I think one of the most significant things that happened this year is that we became an entirely new church. We closed a chapter on being Mosaic San Diego, and we became Makers Church. And it's been really, really neat to step into our new identity. What does it mean for us to be Makers Church? And I think there's so much for us to look back on and to be grateful for, but that's not the point of the morning. Really, the hope is that we would learn how to be present now. But before we get there, I also don't want to miss what it means to look forward into the future. Because the future is important. The future is important for us to dream about, to hope for. We spent the whole month talking about hope. We spent the whole month talking about believing that tomorrow can be better than today. And if you've been around us for any amount of time, you know that we as Makers Church, we are a hopeful people. We are dreamers. We are ones who live with our heads in the future. We are the ones who talk about making the world better, about changing the course of human history, about living our best lives, about making a difference, about doing all of these things that require us to imagine it and then to go do it. This is in our DNA. This is in the essence of who we are. In the future, it's so important to dream about and to plan for and to make goals and to, if you need to do it for a few days, make some resolutions, but you'll break them, like day three. But I think it's important for us to think about what God would have us do. What is he calling us into? And I think about what it is that I see for us as a church. What is it that I really am hoping that God would do in 2018? And the funny thing is, the crazy thing is that it's actually not a new idea. It's the same heart. It's the same vision. It's the same mission that we've always seen from the day we started this church and from the day Jesus said go to the church 2,000 years ago. That we would see lives changed to the point that people, that you become fully alive. And that you start living to your fullest potential, that we help you uncover it and unleash it. Our hope is that every single one of you would know that the mission of Jesus is worthy of your life, and that you could become part of making the world better and the world different, that you could be a bringer of heaven to earth. And that's our hope, and we will move heaven and earth. We will do everything we can in our power to create moments and opportunities and situations and all sorts of crazy, we'll kick you, we will pull you, we will do whatever we can to help you realize that God has you here for a purpose, and that people will only know his love if they experience it through us. And so as we long to move together into the future to be a people of love, to people who love God and love others, our hope is that we would find new and creative ways to continue to do that. But we're not talking about the future today, and we're not talking about the past today. What I really want to sit in is this here and now, this presence. Why is that so challenging for us to be present? Why is it so difficult for us to be here and now? I think one of the reasons, it's not our fault. Isn't it easy to point the blame first? I love that. The church, I think, is to blame for many of these things. The church lives with their head in heaven. We have been taught this. We have learned that heaven is this thing that we should be waiting for, that one day that things will get better, that we are so future-focused that we just wait for God to do what he does. Instead of realizing that the then and there is as important as the here and now. And that the here and now is as important as the then and there. And that the heaven, that the kingdom of God that Jesus talks about is not something that will happen then, but it can happen now. And the best thing that we can do with our lives is give it away to the making of heaven on earth. And my hope is that we would realize that these are the moments, that today is the time that we've been given to do just that. And one of the things that I've really begun to learn about the future, it is that it is only shaped by the decisions that we make today. The future can either happen to us or we can create it. It's in the name of our church. We can let it happen to us or we can make it. And it's what we do now, it's what we do here and now that will actually shape what unfolds in the future. That we have an input, we have a bearing on what will take place by the choices of what we do together. I love that in Matthew 6:34, we're reminded of the significance of the now. It says, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Isn't that encouraging? I love it. It's like, tomorrow's going to suck, so deal with today's suck. Or it's a mixed bag. Right? I think if we look back over 2017, nobody could say, man, it was all a mountaintop. And very few of us can say the whole thing was a valley. There are moments that are up and there are moments that are down. And I love that the scriptures point us to seize the moment, to grab a hold of today. It's the only thing that we're promised. It's the passage that leads up to this. It's so beautiful. It says, why do you worry about what you wear, what you eat? It says the birds aren't worried about it. The flowers in the fields aren't worried about it. That God will always provide. Do not worry about tomorrow, for it will have enough trouble of its own. I love that the scriptures say, you've got a big enough task to just figure out today. And I hope that you and me, that we would find a way to step into each and every moment, that we would almost have this painful reminder. I was just practicing it this morning during worship. Like, just be here. Don't be thinking so much about, even in a few moments, what am I going to say when I get up there and what's going to happen and is everything going to work and what are we doing tonight for New Year's Eve? And all of the things, our minds are always racing. And it's such a challenge to just be worried about the here and now and just to just sit and be present. It's all we have is this moment. And I love that this is what the Christmas story is actually pointing to anyways. As we wrap a nice little bow around the Christmas season, the whole point of the story, the whole thing that unfolds is that God is pointing to us that he would go to great lengths, that he would move heaven and earth so that he could come and be present with us. Emmanuel, God with us. This idea that God's presence came at a great cost. And I think that's a reminder for us too that our presence will come at a great cost. What will it look like for us to be present with each other? I think just a couple practical things for us. It would be listening to someone's story, even if you've already heard it before. I think this is one of my biggest gifts is I'm so future-focused, I actually forget about the past. So I can watch a movie like it's the first time. I work as a fireman, and the guys were talking about Rescue Me, and I was like, I've never seen it. And the guys, we got the box set. We'll bring it into work. So we start watching it, and I'm like, this is awesome. This is so cool. And I come home, and I tell my wife, babe, watching Rescue Me, I can't believe I've never seen it. She's like, babe, we watched that whole series together when we first got married a couple times. And I'm like, I have no recollection. So if you're future-focused, it's a bit of a gift. It's a bit of a gift to sit and listen to someone's story. But for some of us, all we can do when we're sitting and listening to someone is think about how we're going to respond. We think about what we're going to say next or how we're going to top their story. You know any toppers? Don't elbow your friend. But people who just, all you can think about is topping that story. When you're listening to a story, when you're listening to someone, just be present and just listen. Try to clear your head. Celebrate with someone, even if you're not excited. You ever faked it? Some people are really good at it. Some people are also awful. But I think that's it's an important discipline for us. When someone's excited about something that you don't even understand, celebrate with them. The scriptures say, celebrate with those who celebrate and mourn with those who mourn. I can't think of anything that we can avoid better than mourning with someone. Have you ever tried to fake that? It's pretty difficult. If you're not actually moved to emotions, if you're not actually moved in your spirit to mourn with someone, it's a difficult thing to do. And I think this is the idea, this is the concept of where empathy comes in, where you try to sit in somebody else's seat, where you try to walk somebody else's path, and you sit with them. I think this is an example of what it would mean to be present with each other. For us as a church family and as an immediate family, we've had some really painful moments this year. And I talk about this sometimes, but it's really difficult for me personally to be empathetic. I work as a fireman, and one of our defense mechanisms is we just turn ourselves off to it. And so for me this year, I said, I want to become more empathetic. I want to be able to understand where people are coming from. And then sometimes you get what you ask for. You have the most unforeseeable events happen in the friends of those you love the most. And it's been a painful experience for me and our family to walk through some of that with some friends this year. It also looks like for us dancing with others, even when you can't dance. Shalice, Drew, I cut some rug at your wedding because I love you guys. And it was freezing cold and I had to get warm. But it looks like us taking risks, right? To be present in the moment, in the here and the now. It's just enter in, even if you're not into it. Even if you're not into sports and the game is on cheer. Even if you're not into the food, try it. Spit it in a napkin and hide it. Right? It's about being here and now. Or maybe it's trying something new, even if you're uncomfortable, taking a risk that would move you out of your comfort zone. Just a few ways for us to put practicality around what does it look like to be present. There's a passage I want to kind of end the Christmas season with. It's a story in Matthew 2:19. It says this. It says, after Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead. So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. What an interesting story to kind of end the Christmas narrative. If you missed it, what happens is Jesus is born. God enters human history through a virgin birth, which is a crazy thing. And they have him in a manger, and crazy people, random people show up with weird gifts. And the whole Christmas story happens that most of us know. And then all of a sudden, this little king that is born is a threat to the powers that be. So they issue a decree that all children under the age of 2 would be murdered. And so Joseph and Mary scoop up their son, and they become refugees in the land of Egypt. And they run away, and they hide so that Jesus, the king, the Messiah, would not be murdered. And it's an interesting part in the story, because if they were not obedient, the death of Jesus would have come a whole lot sooner than when it did on Calvary. And they escape to Egypt, and all of a sudden they get word that they can go back. And I love that it says go back to Israel, and they translate that to Jerusalem. They translate it to like the cool big city. What the story doesn't point to is that Nazareth is actually where they had already come from. It's their small podunk town that they did not want to go back to. And so they go to Israel. And they go to Jerusalem, and they go to the big, bustling city. And I think it's an interesting part of the story, because if you're honest, like, it sounds like a good vacation, right? Like running for your life, going to a new land, seeing, you know, the really cool stuff in Egypt. And we would love to be used by God in that way, where we just, like, live dangerously and do some really neat things. And that sounds exhilarating and fun, at least for some of us. But to go back to where you came from, I mean, some of you are experiencing that right now. You're at the end of your Christmas vacation. And like Tuesday, life begins again. And you're like, oh no. I got to face the music. I got real life coming at me. And you all know that like as romanticized as Christmas vacation can be, or honeymooning in Scotland, or doing all of the things that can take place over this Christmas season, at some point we have to come back to our roots. And it's interesting, they go to Jerusalem, they try to go to the bustling city, but it's too dangerous there, so they're forced back to the district of Galilee, into the town that they are from. Now, I've got to tell you, if I had to go back to the town that I am from, I would cease to exist. I would shrivel up and die. I'm from like the worst possible part of California, in the armpit, in the Central Valley. It's a terrible place. I would never recommend going there. But some of you are from places like that. It's why you're here. It's why we love San Diego. And some of you don't have to go far. I mean, it could be Homol or Lakeside or wherever you're from. Right? Right? And I love what's happening in this story, is that God is inviting them back to their roots so that they can learn how to be present in the moment. But you know what I think the most difficult part of presence is? It's not about presence. It's about contentment. See, I think the reality is that so many of us do not like to be present because we are not content. We do not like where we're from. We do not like the cards we've been dealt. We do not like the lot that's been given, the job that we have, the relationship that we're in, the place that we're from, the family history that we have. We do not like that the dreams that we had have not yet happened. We do not like the failures that we have let define us. We do not like the things that are happening in our midst. And so we don't have a presence issue. We have a contentment issue. And I think it's true that so many of us lack contentedness, that we keep our heads in the clouds, or we look back to the good old days because we just can't simply cope with what's happening all around us. So I think the challenge for many of us is not to just be present, but to be content. The scriptures say this in 1 Timothy. It says, now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into this world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Have you ever been upset that, like, Santa didn't bring what you wanted? Or that you didn't get what you were really hoping for? I know my son, he's like devastated that Santa didn't bring him a zombie kit. He doesn't even know what a zombie is. He just heard kids talking about a zombie kit, and it was like his last little add-on on Christmas Eve. And we're like, zombie kit? Are you kidding me? I think the Bowler kids were responsible for that one. Or the Dwyer kids, I don't know. But it's one of those things where it's like so many times we're just not content with what we have. And I think the scriptures point to this idea that our perspective matters, that the way we see things matter. And scriptures say, just be grateful for the food that you have and the clothes that you have. I love my clothes. Yumi shirt I got for Christmas. But, you know, it's a challenging thing to just look around and be grateful for what you have, to the point that we can begin to envy other people's lives. You ever been there? Why do they get that talent? It's my discipline every week when I'm up here and these people are playing music behind me and I'm like, I want the beard and the guitar. I want the mustache and the drumsticks. I want the top knot and the bun. I want all of these things that I cannot have. It's amazing that we can envy each other's gifts and we can miss our own. And the scriptures say this in 1 Corinthians 7, only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Paul said it, but I'm going to say it. This is my rule in our church. Do not envy one another's lives. Do not envy the talents that somebody else's have. Do not envy the platform or invitation or opportunities that other people get. Appreciate the life that you have been given. That God designed you, marked you, set you into human history at this present moment to make a contribution that nobody else can make. And if we spend all of our time trying to be Taylor Dwyer, we have way too much beard in all the photos. If we spend all of our time trying to live somebody else's life, no one will try to live ours. It's up to us to grab a hold of this present moment in the here and now and begin to live up to our fullest potential. Do not envy one another's lives, but be grateful for the life that you've been given and step fully into your talents and your passions and your strengths. I think the secret ingredient to embracing the life God has for us is to be content even in our present circumstances. I think it's so easy to get caught up in this mindset that we can only be grateful for the fun stuff. We can only be grateful for the good stuff, only grateful for the top 9 Instagram photos that we're all posting today that people like the most. But I think that there's this discipline for us to be grateful in our present circumstances. I've been reminded of this. I'm studying for the captain's exam at work, and I'm an awful student in general. And I hate studying, and I hate the temptation that studying has been put on me to pull away from the family and the act of being present. It's this tension that I'm in right now. And I've been practicing, just repeating this mantra as I'm studying for this captain's exam, that what I do now will shape my opportunities in the future. That the discipline of learning this craft and sharpening my skills and becoming more educated on what it would mean to step into a new opportunity, it matters now more than it is going to even matter then. It's a disappointing thing to realize that if we miss the moment now, it might take it away then. And so it's a balancing act of trying to figure out how do we become grateful even for terrible things like studying or being overwhelmed or overloaded with things in our lives. I want to close with this exhortation from the Apostle Paul. And I think the most interesting thing about this passage is that he wrote this while he was in prison. That the Apostle Paul writes this as he is locked up, imprisoned, and chained. In Philippians 4, verse 4, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Well, we've been talking a lot about peace on earth this Christmas season. That peace is what Jesus came to bring. And in fact, we've even used this passage a few times this month. That when we're anxious or we're worried and we present our request to God, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to give us what we ask for. It says what he gives us in exchange is a peace that surpasses all understanding. And I think one of the biggest recipes, one of the biggest secrets to being content in your present circumstances is to give it to God, to just release it to him and become grateful for the very thing that you're in. In verse 8, he says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." Isn't it interesting that while Paul was in prison, that he would remind us that the things that we dwell on will shape our perspective? He says, think about the good things. Dwell on them. Focus on them. Whatever's excellent, whatever's praiseworthy, keep your mind there. Don't dwell on the bad stuff. Don't dwell on the pain. Don't sit in the misery. Take your time to mourn, but move on. And when you look back, look at the goodness of those who were around you and those who walked with you and those who came and visited you and those who cooked you meals and those who sat with you. And if you don't have anybody doing that for you, go do it for someone else. Because those are the memories that are good and praiseworthy and good. In verse 9, he says, "Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." He says, don't just sit with it. Take it and do something with it. Take the goodness and give it away. Verse 10, "I rejoice greatly in the Lord. At last, you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need or I have learned to be content, for I have learned to be content in whatever the circumstances." I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living with plenty or in want. I can do all of this through him who gives me strength. To be content in all circumstances. What a gift. What a gift. To be able to sit in the misery and the beauty, to sit in the agony and the celebration, to sit in the pain and the joy, and count it all as good, count it all as from God, that we can take all of those things, that God could work it all together for good. And that's my challenge to us this morning. As we look back on the past and we look forward into the future, may we be reminded that what we do now will shape all that is to come. Let's pray.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.